The first item on the agenda is the review of the library budget at page 389.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Barb Bratton. I'm the library director for Kenosha Public Library and also the director for the Kenosha County Library System, which is why I'm here. County systems are, or library systems, are defined in state statute in Chapter 43. And I'm going to pass out this because I think this is a whole lot easier to look at our budget, the way that we're doing here in this spreadsheet, than what's in your book. So what we do is we provide all the technology support for all the libraries in the county, which is Community Library and Kenosha Public Library. And we serve as the administrative body for that, which is unusual. We're the only system in the state that doesn't have staff. So the Kenosha Public Library administers the county system. And for that reason, we can use our money to provide much more direct service. We don't have to pay for any administrative costs except the audit. So you'll look at the breakdown here of our revenues. Non-resident use is people who live in the county that don't pay directly into a library. So that would be Bristol, Pleasant Prairie, and those cities in particular. And then shared countywide resources, I'll get into that later, as what we purchase together as libraries. The state of Wisconsin provides money for this system as well. They gave us a tiny little bump and they told us what we had to spend it on, so there's not a whole lot of leeway there. And Lakeshore's library system has to pay us for all the use of Racine and Walworth County residents at the Kenosha County Libraries. So that's important, and you'll see that we had a big jump in 2019 because a lot more people are coming over the border and using our libraries, and so we are reimbursed for that. So we had a 26.84% increase in net income this year, which is will be very useful. You'll see under expenditures, we've also done a lot to consolidate with other systems and to partner with them so that we can reduce our costs. And you can see just between the 2018 and 2019 budget, we've gone down considerably in that central ILS contract. That's that the library software that keeps the patron records and the bibliographic records and all of that. That main big piece of software that we use. So that went down almost 31% this year. County broadband charges went down significantly because Kenosha Public Library got federal money to get into that fiber that you guys have been on for a while at the county. And so our annual costs for that internet access have gone down dramatically because of that, and those are a part of the county system to run for libraries, and so the costs overall have gone down. And again, you know, we reduced our network expenses because we joined a consortium. So we've been able to really to reduce our costs. Down under Kenosha Public Library, you'll see that there's that non-resident use and then the county library use. So the non-resident use, again, Bristol, Pleasant Prairie, the residents in the county who don't pay directly to a library. So if you're a resident of the city, you pay directly the city tax for the Kenosha Public Library. If you are one of the four municipalities that are involved in a joint library agreement with a community library, you pay directly to a library. If you don't pay directly to a library, you pay a county tax. And so that's where that's recouped for. So the people who don't pay, say they live in Pleasant Prairie and they use the Kenosha Public Library, then Kenosha Public Library gets reimbursed from Pleasant Prairie with a county tax for that. And that's based on use. It isn't per capita. It isn't, you know, it's based on use. So that can go up or down whether people do bother to come to the library or not. Community library gets reimbursed the same way. And you'll see that Lakeshores has to pay, we pay Lakeshores as well. But you'll see that reimbursement for use by Kenosha County residents to Lakeshores library system also went down, which means they're using our libraries, or we're using their libraries less and they're using our libraries more, which is a net gain of income for us. So overall, your contribution that we're asking for Kenosha County is increased only $9,000 for the next year because we've been good with our money.
All right, very good. Discussion from anyone?
Move. Second.
All right, is there a discussion from anybody? Everybody understands this? Or? All right, seeing nothing, then all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we just move on to the next item, Public Works, the larger budget, I'll just distribute an opinion here, which I think is relevant to the health insurance proposal. We take one of these and around the table and also around the room, if you're a supervisor or non-supervisor, I think we made 23 copies, an opinion of the Corporation Council on one of the issues we talked about last night on health insurance. And if you want to come back to that tonight or tomorrow, we certainly can come back to that as well. And we'll give Mr. Carbone a chance to discuss that further. And if you have any questions on that, you can go over it. But we'll see where we're at the end of the agenda tonight or pick it up tomorrow. So with that, we'll move back to Public Works. And Jim, you're going to start that?
Yes, sir.
All right, very good.
Does everybody have one of these? It's a summary of the Public Works budget. We follow this format now for the last few years.
You got an extra one?
Yeah, I got it.
Incidentally, if you're a supervisor and you do not receive one of these opinions, we'll make you on the prompt out here. If you just look. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jim.
Sure. This is a Public Works budget. What I was hoping to do, Mr. Chairman, is there's several different divisions in the department, and we usually kind of go one by one in each division, and when it's done, we vote separately to accept that particular division's budget.
Okay. That's what we're So you're going to start with facilities?
Yeah, I just want to say just a couple words. The first page is there's a list of all of our departments down the side, and the column of operating expenses is equal to the column of the revenues and the levy. So operating, and it compares the 2019 budget to the 2018 budget. We've got a 2.8% increase in total operating expenses, and in the revenue side, there's a 2.7% increase. And then the levy on the right-hand side on page one shows by department a 3% increase in the levy. If you flip to page two, and you go to the top, on the left-hand side there, that levy is the same 3%. But what we have in our budget this year, which is new to us, is a cross-charge from the HR department. So Human Resources, I believe you saw their budget last night. Their budget should have gone down because they have taken a chunk of their budget and cross-charged it out to the various departments. And what has hit Public Works, our HR cross-charge is $97,000. So out of the levy increase, the 3% or the $241,000 in aggregate levy increase, $97,000 of it is just a cross-charge, a reclass from the HR department. So our revised levy within our particular department is $144,000, or really 1.8%, which is under the 2.25% recommended levy increase from this committee. Now, there should have been a decrease in the HR budget, too. You should have seen that last night. So apples to apples, we're underneath the 2%. In the bottom section here, it just shows some detail of ups and downs by department, so we're going to go into that as we go through each particular department. Our whole levy, as a percentage of the county's levy, we're about 12.3%, Public Works Department, 12.3% of the levy. And for bonding, the total bonding this year is 22.9, and the capital projects, the bonding for capital projects that are coming out of Public Works are a little over 19 million, or 85% of the bonding. So we're 12% of the levy, but we're 85% of the bonding. And we'll do both here. We'll go through the operating expenses, and then we'll go through all the capital projects. And we will start with, oh, there's one other summary thing. I'm hoping Ray can help me out here on page three. This is a budget for full-time equivalents for our department, Facilities, Highway, Golf. At the end of the day, in 2018 budget, we budgeted 171.83 people. 2019, we're actually down a half a person. I'm calling it, maybe I got a little bit too familiar, but we had a guy in the Parks Department who who's been here for 40 years, who retired. In the 2018 budget, we had him in for this year, for half a year. He's retired. And his Matt has already picked his replacement. He's been working with us. So our headcount, there's really no change from one year to the other. We had some movement from a UW Extension department. You can see one person leaving now. She is now employed by the Parks Department. And same person, just a different boss. And also within the Parks Department, we've taken one seasonal person, a full-time equivalent seasonal person, and made that person a full-time employee in the parks. Same number of heads, just a little reclassing from one from departmental and another from a seasonal to a full-time. So I don't know, maybe Ray can...
Yeah, I would like to give a little additional insight. I can't resist, though, because at the Public Works Committee, I made this statement as well. If you look at the parks and you go to the far right, you will see, for those algebra geeks in the room, plus one C's, plus one UW extension, minus one half Nick is equal to 0.5. Okay, that's about the same reaction I got. So that aside,
you're lucky the room's crowded. I can't say what I'm thinking.
There's a couple of things on here that this doesn't show in facilities, even though the headcount number hasn't changed. We are making a fairly significant change to one of the positions. It's documented in the reclass section, whatever when you get to that page. We're taking one existing custodian position and reclassifying it to a plumber. If you remember, in the last few years, we've added two skilled trades. We have an electrician in-house now, a card-carrying electrician. We have a card-carrying HVAC person. Those have saved us a significant amount of money, have given us technical insight when we do tackle projects that we didn't have before, we'd always have to contract for. When we get the plumber, the thought is we're going to experience the same type of things, same type of benefits, and we will have the three building trades covered then with in-house technical expertise that we've never had before. And Mike was able to do that because even though we've added about, I'm going to say, with the build-out of the second floor PSB, that Frank managed that project this past year, with that build-out, the addition of the FMB to a lesser extent, and the addition of Brookside, there's probably in the area of 80 to 90,000 square feet we've added to the county portfolio. We haven't added any custodians. It's largely because of the lean type activities that Mike's done to improve efficiency. He's actually comfortable taking one custodian position and reclassifying it to a plumber. We're gonna get kind of double bang for our buck. I just wanted to make the committee aware of that. With regard to the highways department, again, the headcount hasn't changed, but you'll notice in the reclass page that there were some significant changes there in that we've broken out what was largely the organization of the management structure within the highway department for, I'm going to say, decades. We changed that to improve the focus of things on the operations side. We have one superintendent that is just going to handle all the operations management, and we've taken a superintendent and now have that person outward focused so that we can preemptively identify things that need to be addressed, develop plans to address those things, get it into our work schedule so we can continue to reduce the number of emergencies that we have to respond to. So that whole thing was developed in a way to kind of make the department more proactive so that we don't get behind the, we're not behind the eight ball, but this will keep us from ever getting behind the eight ball from a maintenance standpoint. So those are two things that, like I said, the headcount hasn't changed, but the actual nature of how the headcount is organized going into 19 is going to provide a lot more effective utilization of resources. Those were the two biggies. The rest are pretty much straightforward, and Jim covered them. So that was all I wanted to add.
Very good. Okay, page 4, facilities. We use this format for each of the various divisions within the DPW department. The top is expenses, broken into the four categories: personnel, contracted services, supplies, and fixed expenses. And then the next section is the revenues. That the various type can vary by department, but we always show what the levy amount will be. And these levy amounts are the ones that are the 3% number because they include expenses associated with a trip. And they're the ones that are in the book. They match exactly what's in the book. So I know a lot of you reviewed the stuff and went through the facilities detail. We have a couple of guests here tonight who have graciously added to our presence here. A couple of fire chiefs. I don't know if you want to introduce yourselves. Just let the people know who you are and why you're here.
Good evening. Yes, I am Mike Slover. I'm the Salem Lakes Fire Chief. That used to be the town of Salem, for those of you who didn't know. Also, all the president of the Chiefs and Cabin Association here in Kenosha County.
Carson Wilkinson, Fire Chief of the Village of Summers.
And these two gentlemen are here to answer any questions you might have about the simulcast project, which we'll get to when we're on page 5. Okay. I could run through these, or you can read through them, or if you had other questions about other accounts, maybe I'll just briefly touch on a few of them. Salaries are increasing. As Ray pointed out, there's really no headcount increases, but there are some personnel changes, some reclasses, and plus there's the normal increases that these people get every year. Anything we have for medical insurance, we try to do the best we can when we are looking at the original headcount sheets. And I don't want to say guessing, because we know most of the people, what choice they made, family or individual. But a lot of the increases are because people have changed from one to the other. Or there's a new person in there who took a different, either family or single. Utilities, we're decreasing our budget a little bit based on history. We feel we can bring that down. Building increase, maintenance. We anticipate some increases just based on increased space and aging of equipment. Contractual services is the same reason. We have a few additional maintenance contracts, same with supplies. On revenues, we had decreased the traffic fine income. It's actually gone down, so we knocked that down a little bit. Parking structure revenues, the same from year to year. The safety building rental income, we increased that from... What we do is the expenses over here in the PSB, we charge part of it to KPD, and we charge part of it to Joint Services. He's outnumbered here tonight. They have more space over here, so they're going to take part of the increase. So that's the story on the expenses for facilities. Anybody got any questions? Oh, one other thing. This is really a combination of three different mini divisions we have. There's a job center where we actually add all those expenses separately because we bill out to customers. There's the public safety building, which we have in a book, a separate section, because we bill that back to the two other places. And then everything else goes into what we call the civic center, which is all the other buildings.
What about page 2 there, the capital under facility?
Page 5?
Yeah, I
just covered the operations. Page 5 is all of capital.
Any questions on the operations, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, the only two notes I had were I think it was step increases and the reclasses are the salary difference, but I also had the $30,000 in maintenance and supplies. You said that's a historical number?
Well, we think there's going to be an increase. We have extra square footage. Plus, I'm putting something in there for our experience this year is a little bit high. So I think we're going to need that to cover expenses next year.
So that's all I had on that section.
All right. Anything else on operations? What about the capital budget?
All these items that are listed here are the same ones that were listed in your book underneath the facilities division. Or in the back. I can kind of run through them, or if people have questions.
I'll run through them.
Okay. The first chunk on top is facilities for not the public safety building and not the job center. So there's some small items. We have to put up everything that's above $5,000 that's of capital nature on this list. There's installing a roof hatch platform at free trial. A snowplow attachment for this campus here, a truck salter for the out by 45 and 50, door replacement, some storm drain piping that's in this building, closet readers for the IT. Instead, right now they've got keys, so if somebody wants to get into one of the IT closets, They've got to call somebody to come with a key, so we're going to install this swipe system. UPS battery replacements is something we have to do every few years to replace the backup batteries in the IT and in whoever else, whatever closet they might be in. KCAB remodel and the KCC remodel, you want to talk about those two, Ray?
Yeah, so the KCAB remodel has to do with this building was last remodeled in 1993, if I remember right, so 25-ish years. There's a couple areas that we want to do a little bit of a refresh in terms of carpeting and some of the fixtures to improve some efficiencies in those areas. I believe the third floor is going to have some work done, and I believe the first floor is going to have some work done. We've got $100,000 budgeted. We haven't scoped that out to the nth degree with architects yet, but we believe it's going to be somewhere in that range. $100,000 should be adequate to cover what remodeling and refresh we want to do in this building. At KCC, what we're looking to do is take in the existing P&D space, given that there is a significant amount of unused space there, we'd like to take UW Extension folks, move them in and co-locate them in the same space with P&D. That way we can take advantage of utilization of support staff for both of those functions, as well as utilization of some technical resources, some fairly sophisticated printers and scanners and things. We don't have to have duplicates of those. We can use that, but we still want to have those two departments have maintain their own identity. So we figure we can co-locate them in the same space, make better use of that space, as well as better efficiencies for the support staff. And what it'll really do is free up space in the existing UW Extension area so that the sheriff can start to have more of a presence out in the western end of the county to accommodate some of what they plan on doing with the increased use of squads and deputies being able to take home squads, as opposed to having them still come down here. If there are some that live in the western end or are assigned to the western end, they'll be able to marshal and roll call out there and handle some of that stuff out there. That's basically what, and so we've got $100,000 figured. Again, I haven't gotten concept blueprints from the architect yet. We walked through with him and we've identified what all the space needs are going to be. It's just a matter of getting that drawn up and figured out so we can get it out to bid. That's pretty much it for KCAB and KCC.
The next item on there is the ceremonial courtroom, and this is the preliminary work, the design, and some of the early development work to redo the ceremonial courtroom. The next chunk is the public safety building.
So I just want to clarify on that ceremonial courtroom, just so that the committee understands, it's really to do the engineering and architectural work. It's not to actually do the work that's required.
I was going to wait, but now you fired me up. So explain to me a ceremonial courtroom and where this money's going.
So if you go to the second floor of the courthouse, the southwest corner, it's Branch 3, Judge Schrader's courtroom. That's the only remaining ceremonial courtroom left in the building. There were two when it was originally constructed, 1925, 26. Mm-hmm. The one that was in the southeast corner was, I couldn't nail down exactly when, but it was sometime in the 50s or 60s, as the need for more courtroom space took place. They actually created a floor. They cut that ceremonial courtroom on that side in half so that they created a third floor above it. So that's why if you go on the third floor, there's offices. It used to be the DA's office. Now it's a courtroom. On the third floor, on the southeast corner. The southwest corner remains as it was originally constructed at 25. It's the only room left like it. What happened was in 1973-ish, when they put in a more robust air conditioning system, as opposed to installing all of the ductwork and the mechanicals associated with that air conditioning, above the ceiling, the decorative ceiling and skylight that's in there, they could have installed it between the ceiling and the roof. There's a crawl space of about 4.5-5 feet. As opposed to doing that, I'm sure it was cheaper at the time to just do it in the ceiling. And if you saw what they did to the stained glass skylight that was the original feature to the building, and all of the decorative plaster murals and other things that are up there, they literally must have taken sawzalls, or at the time maybe chainsaws, and carved through this stuff and bolted ductwork to that and then put an acoustic ceiling below that. That's what's up there. So it really, you look at it now, and I'm not Mr. History Buff, but I can tell you that when I saw it, I could only say criminal. This is criminal what they did to this thing. So this
not is, then though,
not then, right? Not then. It was at the time. Probably it was that. The approach. So, but right now, looking at it, the things on the it's been on the National Historic Registry. It's arguably probably the most important public building we've got. It represents county government. We would like to take this money would be used to do the engineering and design work to determine the feasibility of what it would take to actually restore that, move the air conditioning where it should have been installed, ideally in that crawl space area, and restore that so it looks like it did in 1925. It would preserve it, restore it, and preserve it. So that's what this one is.
So that's one of the two ceremonial.
The only one left.
Okay.
The other one's gone.
Okay. So what are you thinking for a, I mean, I know you can't really give me a hard and fast, but what are you thinking?
I can tell you it will be a seven-figure number. It won't be an eight-figure number, that much I know, but it will
Oh, that's encouraging.
It will be a seven-figure number.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we have to at some point say, is that worth it? I mean,
right.
I'm going to ask that question. I don't, I mean, Terry, you go in there. Are we willing to spend that kind of money to, I mean, that's a lot of money.
Understandable. Yeah, it is the, we've done a great job, I think, of restoring the exterior of the building to prevent it from any further degradation or, because there was things that were happening because the exterior had been neglected. We've got that bolted up. This, in my mind, is the most significant, really the only piece interior-wise that would be restored to the original building.
And based on what's in there now and how they did all that, is there a possibility of further degradation of the ceiling and whatnot? I mean, could it fall?
I don't think it could fall the way it's... They bolted it rather robustly to the plaster, yes.
Yeah.
They filled in the skylight with concrete. Not entirely sure what the advantage of that was at the time, except I think they tried to block any light from actually coming through.
So is the glass still there?
The glass is still there. All
so
the stained glass
no,
is there. It just
so
has
no
about a two-inch layer of concrete on it.
There's no chance of that concrete eventually breaking that glass and coming through?
Yeah, I'm sure there wasn't any load analysis done when they poured the concrete onto stained glass.
So it's kind of important to actually do look at this from the engineering aspect to make sure we are covering.
This would give us that information. Mm-hmm. Structural analysis would be done as part of this. Absolutely.
Because if that does fall and hurts somebody, that could end up costing us a lot more.
It's only over where the general public sits. It's literally the dead center of the courtroom. That's where the skylight. It's a big skylight.
We got a lot of general
public. The lawyers are gone. 18 by 18, I would say 20 by 20.
Terry, they put your table right there.
Ron, I just say the longer you wait, the more it's going to cost. Do what you got to do. That's what I say. Yeah.
This is a study, and it's going to tell us. Six figures.
It would give us. No, I think it's going to be a seven-figure number. I don't want to mislead anybody. I don't think this is going to be a few hundred thousand dollars to fix this thing.
And this puts this building back into its
this
historical.
Would put that, this would put that courtroom, the only remaining ceremonial courtroom, back to how it was in 1925 or close to it. Anyways.
Dan.
I guess my question is: this courtroom being used every day today?
Yes.
Are we getting tons of complaints about the courtroom?
There are some complaints relative to the effectiveness of the HVAC, but I don't think dramatic. There's no leaking or anything like that occurring in there. There's not that kind of complaint. If we popped out the ceiling tiles so people could see what was up there, I believe we would get complaints. Because when I saw it, I went up in a lift. We popped out a few ceiling tiles to see what was up there, and I was blown away. I took some pictures in the limited space that I could kind of navigate.
But I can appreciate where you're coming from, but I got to kind of back with Supervisor Gentz on this. Is this a want or a need? You know what I mean? This is, you're coming to this committee And I can even appreciate the liability aspect of cement on the Skylake. But we need to look at this further, because if it's a want at a seven-figure number, that's something that has to be discussed in my
And that's what this would allow us to do, was get the engineering work done. It would also put us in a position to identify any potential grant funding that might be available for this. Without this kind of, it's similar to what we do in parks, where you kind of have to do the engineering first, figure out what you're actually up against, and then you can use that as a mechanism to apply for grants.
Well, I understand that, but you didn't say anything about grant funding. I didn't hear anything in the last 20 minutes about grant funding. So that may change the game a little bit. What are we going to be on the hook for? I mean, this is just dollars and cents, you know?
Don't know. I just know that at this point, this is what will allow us to do that. So,
what would be the first number of that seven figures? You don't know, right?
Can we do it I am hesitant to say, I'm going to say it would either be a one or a two.
Oh,
it's somewhere in there. One right. Something.
Don't remove the tiles. Don't look.
Well, pretty much I was going to ask the same thing, because you mentioned at least seven figures are less than eight. So I took it that it's probably going to be very close to eight figures.
No.
So,
no.
But then obviously it's going to be
one or two. I would say the first number is going to be a one or a two. And that's me using... going out a little bit on a limb based on what I know at this point.
I guess I agree with Supervisor Gantz and Chairman Esposito that if it's a one, even the $350,000 right now, especially this year with all the money that we're funding for roads, which we need those, so I don't think it's a good time to be doing that.
Dennis, what did your committee say on this?
The committee passed the budget unanimously. I have a few things to say about this, but I suppose you have to look at it as a historical building before you make any decision. It would be this, Ray used the word criminal. I didn't quite understand what he was talking about. Ray and I have a meeting each month before we have our meeting, so I can get a hold of everything. And he had the pictures for me. It's just astonishing. And I asked them, we were trying to find out who was the contractor, who was the architect, who in their right mind would do what they did. If you saw what was up there and what they did do, it just blows you away. So our committee passed this funding to do the study to the engineer.
Ray, can you describe what is above this false ceiling a little more clearly?
So basically, in the center of that courtroom, there's about a 18 or 20 foot square skylight. Very similar, actually, when you walk into the courthouse, the lobby, and you look up, it's kind of mirrors that. That's what's in the center. That was the primary means of light into the building when it was constructed. There were lights on the side, but that was the primary means, was that skylight. It's stained glass, similar to like a church-type stained glass, which now, like I say, is covered in concrete. In addition to that, there's the crown molding around, like if you in the hallways in the courtroom, there's that crown molding. This is more ornate than that, and it was literally sawed through and ducts bolted up to it through that crown molding. There's some other decorative, fairly ornate plaster features that are distributed throughout the ceiling. Those oftentimes just have hammer drill, screws and cables hanging from them to suspend the ducts. There's some muralization, not as ornate as what's behind the judge's bench, but there's some murals up there as well, and those have been so. Kind of the whole thing has just been.
Isn't there some engraved writing around this here?
Yeah, and there is engraved writing. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. There is engraved writing around, above the crown molding, and some of that has been damaged as well. So it was.
Seems to me the courthouse was something like that when they remodeled it. But am I right?
Right.
So that's been corrected, right?
In where?
Well, the courthouse was something. Yeah, seems to me I remember some. When they were doing the roof or something, there was some, I can't remember everything, but it was something but you're talking about in the courthouse at one time.
So when we did the courthouse exterior, I know we reviewed the, you can call them dog houses. They look kind of like small greenhouses. That basically, that's what the natural light comes through that and then goes through the skylight.
Right.
We made sure that those were sealed up, that the roof was mated up properly so there's no leaking or anything occurring above on the roof. That work took place.
I think we got to remember back in the late 20s, it was when Depression hit, and I suppose they were looking for the cheapest way to do everything, maybe, huh?
No, when they put it up in 25, they put, it was just over $1 million at the time, and they did, well, you see what they did. It was very well done. It was built to last hundreds of years, and if we keep taking care of it, it will last hundreds of years.
Andy.
Through the chair and the corporation council, now that we know that there's an 18 by 25 skylight,
I'd say 18 by 18 or 20 by 20.
That's filled with concrete. That would have fallen, hypothetically. We'd already know about this. We're now negligent now if we don't do anything about it, correct?
Well, certainly at this point, we're on notice that there is a potential risk, and what Ray is indicating is that this study would give us a way to better evaluate that risk. Yeah.
I think it has a study.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of the ceiling falling. If that fell in, that'd be unbelievable. But I this reminds me of the city's battle with the Southport Beach House, where, you know, the want, need, you want to put a big new roof on it, at what cost? And to me, I love historical stuff too, but I also have to look out for the taxpayers' money, and you mentioned grant money, and we can do an engineering study. You know, I can be persuaded to go along with this, but if you come in with $2 million to fix this, it's going to be a hard sell for me. I'll just tell you that right now.
Further discussion? You want to proceed?
Okay. The next section is public safety building. There's some small items there, ejector pumps and some new doors. Parking lot replacement is the parking lot back here, behind on the other side, directly west of the parking structure. And then the next big project there is the simulcast system. The tower, that's one tower. We have another tower in this year's budget, so this will be the second tower that we'll need to complete that. Where it says joint services councils, that's really the county's portion. Joint service is picking up another chunk of this. Thereby, some councils too are splitting that cost. And then the tower equipment is the equipment that will have to hang on the new tower. And the new tower is going to be, is it by Silver Lake? The new
one at Silver Lake and one down here.
Yeah, one down here. Those are the two new towers we'll be putting in. And this is supposedly supposed to give us 99% coverage?
Not supposedly.
Okay.
Ray?
So I had to talk. So I can provide additional information. As most of the committee knows, I can geek out on this stuff, and I know Supervisor Gentz will have no problem shutting me down when I get to that point. But to give you an overview, as Jim indicated, there's three pieces to the puzzle. And what ends up happening is when the two groups of agencies that have countywide function from a communication standpoint are the Sheriff's Department, has a countywide mission, and the County Fire. County Fire, even though it's made up of about 9, I think, separate agencies, that functions as they all use the same frequency to communicate on. Right now, given some of the topography and some of the other technical things involved, there's some severe limitations on both the east end of the county, as Chief Wilkinson can attest to, as well as on the west end, as Chief Slover can attest to. The simulcast system will basically do that. Right now, the way the system works is it's broadcast from one point in the county, and that's why it can't effectively deal with some of the topographical issues. A simulcast system will allow us, in this case, it's going to be four towers that simultaneously broadcast the same signal and also receive communications back. It will cover the county in what's called a 95-95 way. 95% of the county is covered at 95% of the time. That's a federal standard that we shoot for. Actually, based on the initial modeling we did, it's probably going to be better than that. We've set the thing up. We've designed it so that it will accommodate both the Sheriff's Department's current and future needs, the county fire agency's current and future needs, and we've actually constructed it. It's designed in a way to accommodate if city folks, the KPD or the KFD at some point want to join, it will be able to accommodate that as well. It's a very slick from an engineering standpoint the way it's been designed. We went out, we did the RFP for the actual simulcast piece. Matt Fleming helped tremendously, the new purchasing guy, and we have signed a letter of intent to award, but we haven't done anything because we don't have the money. But the intent would be to start the project next year, construct both towers, install the consoles in Josh's operation and dispatch, and accumulate most of the simulcast equipment and get it in place before the end of the year, but actually finish it out in 20. It's probably going to take that long to get everything done.
Yes, Jen.
So what is the 60th Street Tower that we did 2 years ago? What part does that have?
So that's one of the four towers that makes up. So that tower will be, there's actually a tower that's going to be down here because the two existing towers, one just north of the public safety building and one that's actually dead center on the safety building. Those two are at maximum capacity right now. We're going to add one tower down here. We need to add one out in Silver Lake Park. The best area we identified is on the southeast corner of Silver Lake Park up on a hill. And then there'll be four towers. So there'll be one down here we call the PSB vicinity, the 60th Street Tower, the one at 45 and 50, and the one at Silver Lake. Those form the simulcast backbone.
Thank you.
You said this will cover 95% of the...
Yeah, that's kind of the engineering target that's established by the federal government. And what we have now, I don't want to necessarily reveal, but it's substantially less than that.
Yeah.
This is a public safety issue.
Yes.
No,
hey, Ray, can you speak to, are we done in Billy Towers?
Exactly.
We have
I don't know.
I think that these...
I mean, this is, I think this has to be addressed to the committee.
Yeah.
I mean, so
it's
we got two. Yep. We got two more. I don't know anybody's... I'm thinking about that. How many more towers are we going to build?
I'm going to say, with the exception of maybe this young lady, our lifetime of everybody else in this room, the towers will be done.
Thank you.
But they're expandable, right? I mean, you hang some equipment on, there's new equipment arrived.
Yeah,
I mean, things change every day.
They're engineered to accommodate more than what we have to initially load on them. We typically engineer with a 40% excess. So whatever we're going to have to hang on it for the simulcast system, we're going to engineer it in such a way that there's 40% excess capacity we've got to hang stuff on those towers.
Yeah, and like I say, next year they'll come out with another technology. You know,
but the only good thing, like most other technologies, most of this stuff is getting smaller. So from a load standpoint, as we move forward, we should be able to increase the amount of stuff that we can actually hang on top of. You didn't cut me off, did you?
No. No, I'm public safety. I'm all in. Keep talking. All right, go ahead, Bruce.
I hope so.
That's pretty much it. If that.
All right, very good. The facilities budget is before you for discussion. Okay. Is there any?
Move to approve.
Yes. Yeah, Mike.
Ray? We just spent $2 million in KCAP. It's a minor cost here. How is interior storm drain missed?
He's looking at facilities, fifth or sixth one down.
It says right here,
page
interior
five.
Storm drain pipe KCAP. It's a trivial amount. I didn't see it when we reviewed this at committee. I'm just wondering how in the heck we missed that after all
so,
the work that
so
was done.
Mike will be able to flesh this out, but I'll give you the overview. So. From an exterior standpoint, everything was buttoned up very well, and I believe some of them, Frank actually will probably have more insight into this. This particular interior drain pipe was discovered, what was the specifics? It was down in the basement.
That pipe was cracked.
So it's an interior drain pipe.
So the roof drain is coming down. The building and then being pumped out to the street in the basement.
And that was not part of the original scope?
No, we did the building envelope, roof, walls,
everything
exterior. Water pipe. This actually, I think it's all the way down on the ceiling of the first floor where it was a Treasurer's office.
It wasn't even on the radar that this could be bad. It was so far inside the building.
This started out with a couple cracks, and the leaks came down in Mary's arms. We had to repair them for $2,000. More cracks kept showing up. We eventually just bit the bullet on operations to take the whole east loop and have it replaced. And then the west loop started. So this is for the west loop.
And I'm going to say something that sounds a little facetious. And that's that, you know, maybe because the roof was leaking so bad prior to the exterior restoration, not as much water had to go down the drain pipes as now goes down. I'm somewhat facetious, but maybe not. Because that's when we experienced the leakage, was after the roof and everything was buttoned up on top.
All right, further discussion? All right, seeing none, is there a motion to approve?
Yes. Second.
Oh, you did. All right, very good. Any other discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Next item is highways.
UW Extension is next on page 6.
All right, okay. You're calling them.
Yeah, I'm just going over to them.
All right, very good.
Thank you for coming, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you,
Josh. All right.
How's gentlemen. George?
He's doing. He's out at conferences.
Thank you.
Take care.
All quiet in Somers, then. Huh?
Well, we won't say that.
Thank you. UW Extension.
Okay, page 6 is UW Extension, and page 7 is a couple of departments that are associated with UW Extension. The headcount for UW Extension in 2018, there's one person. She's a grant writer. She's been responsible for getting us grants for $1.5 million. I could bore you with what she's done, but she's the parks grants we get. And a couple of facilities grants. She's been the one who's been responsible. She spends a lot of her time working with Matt Collins, the head of parks. And Matt is here all the time, and Bev Baker, who's in charge of UW Extension, splits her time between here and Racine. So everyone thought it was best to have her report into the Parks Department. So you'll see an increase in the Parks Department and a decrease here. The amount is for Nancy and her salary and her benefits is approximately $65,000. So the decrease in the budget from 2018 to 2019, it's pretty much all due to Nancy's being reclassed. So headcount changes. The big number here in this department for UW Extension is the other professional services, which is the contract that we have with the state of Wisconsin for the educators that they provide to us. And that number has not changed for 2018, 2019. Maybe I guess it went down by about $1,000. I think that's travel related. But it's the same people. So there's really no change in the UW Extension on page 6 in their operations. Page 7, the top part is what they call an office account. This is for classes that UW Extension runs. We budget $60,000. In 2017, last year, we only ended up with $39,000. But it's a push, theoretically, levy-wise, because they just try to collect enough money to cover their expenses for their classes. So that's the top office account, no change in a levy, zero. The bottom part is their after-school project. For 2018 and 2019, we're budgeting the same amount. We just put in the 2017 amount to show we were a little bit below. What we do, we have one of the educators in the UW Extension Department who for part of her time will actually be a county employee, and she goes in as a salary when she works with the after-school program. But it's $4,000 worth of expense.
Okay. Motion. Is there a second on the motion?
Second.
Discussion on the UW Extension? None? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye.
Thank you very much.
Parks.
Next department, page 8, is the Parks Department. The increase in the Parks Department levy is $105,000. These numbers here do not include any of the dog park expenses or revenue or the mountain bike. We have a little mountain bike department. Those two departments, they cannot spend any more than they take in revenue. And right now, the dog parks is actually sitting with a surplus. Mountain bikes is, I don't know if there's any real activity in mind. I think we collected some money, but we haven't spent very much. So they're not included in here. This is just the parks division. I'll just run through the highlights. There is an increase of this $64,000 because of the reclass of the person from UW Extension. That all ends up in the personnel category of expenses. So out of that $101,000 increase, $64,000 or $65,000 is the new person. Contracted services. We have Pike River water testing. We have environmental workshops. And we have to do some crack sealing. So there's an increase in the miscellaneous contractual services. There's an increase in the building maintenance supplies based on historical activity. The Pringle Nature Center, there's, I believe it's a $12,000 increase, and that is for a part-time person to work at Pringle. We don't pay them as an employee. It goes into their budget, but we give them, I think we were giving them $25,000, now we're gonna give them $37,000. And they will have another person out there to help with their education, the classes that they run. So that is the increase in expenses for Pringle. I just wanted to mention that if you look in your book, there's a $100,000 budget for Kemper. And we signed a new agreement with Kemper this year. Before, we used to give them $100,000 as a quote-unquote donation, and they would just spend that on whatever they want to spend it on. We signed a memorandum of understanding that specifies we are going to pay the bills, facility-related bills, utilities, any contracted services that would typically be borne by a landlord. We will pay the bills and decide. It's pretty clearly laid out in there what's covered with that. You just don't give them the money so they can spend it. We have to spend it. But in your book, it shows as a Kemper line of Kemper donation of $100,000. We don't spend $100,000 on those items. We don't spend it.
Where's that in the schedule?
Well, it's not on here, but it's in the book underneath Parks Department, underneath their fixed expense section. There's a $100,000 item.
Okay. What page?
Page 120.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Thank you.
So what are their utilities anticipated, et cetera, that you mentioned?
I think last year's utilities were in the 60-some thousand, just for the utilities, but there's other miscellaneous contractual services, such as, like, give me an example, like maintenance contracts for the elevators and
elevator, fire maintenance, fire inspections, anything related to utilities or facilities or those contracted services.
So we budgeted $100,000. It won't exceed $100,000. And if it's less than that, we just don't pay the bills. But that's a big change from before. And when you get to the next page on the capital, you'll see that there's $39,000 in there for, there's, I believe, three projects that the county has agreed to pay that are all related to the building. Again, in the past, we've given them $50,000 and they could spend on what, basically what they wanted to, but the new direction with this MOU is that we pay specifically for those projects, so we make sure that they're for the buildings. And the Buildings and Grounds Committee, we have, I think Matt's on the committee, that's all agreed ahead of time. So there's a difference in the relationship between the county and Kemper.
Two questions. What's the $750 all about for Bristol Woods Parkway and $300,000 revenue, beer garden, future revenue?
Okay, can I just cover one other thing on page 8, and I'll be happy to answer your questions.
Okay.
This budget also has $30,000 worth of Boundless Adventures revenue. That's the new park that is going to be constructed on the grounds at Bristol Woods. Mm-hmm. And we anticipate having more than $30,000 worth of revenue. $50,000 to $60,000, that's the projection that we're getting from the Boundless Adventures people, and that's what historically they have received at other locations. So we'll have some revenue coming in. We budgeted $30,000, and at the Public Works Committee meeting, that committee would like to designate that $5,000 of this revenue specifically be used for maintenance on the Bristol Town Hall, that used to be on the Pringle grounds that got moved to downtown Bristol. So they are suggesting that this budget includes that. Now we have the revenue here. We've got to make sure that the spending occurs. So that's really wasn't discussed too much at our meeting other than it was brought up by one of the supervisors.
Supervisor Ulas made the motion. Yeah. Supervisor Skolinski made the second.
And what's the rationale for paying for it? I mean, we do that for Pleasant Prairie, Salem Lakes, et cetera? City of Kenosha?
So I think I can let the supervisor.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Mr. Chairman, the rationality behind this is that the county parks, Kenosha County has, in the past, always had a relationship with Bristol Historical Society when that building was in Bristol Woods. And they've had a long-standing relationship and commitment, and the Bristol Historical Society is in the process of remodeling, and it's just a way to help them continue to preserve the past and move on with the future. And Pleasant Prairie doesn't have a historical building in a county park. They have their own building on 39th Avenue and 116th Street. The only reason I brought this up is because Kenosha County has had that relationship for many, many years with Bristol Historical Society, and with the remodeling, there's a lot of expenses in it, and this would be a nice way to just help them continue on with that.
Some additional context, too, is that, as Supervisor Uhas indicated, the building was actually on Bristol Woods grounds for decades, and they actually, the Historical Society, raised the money to move it from there to the new location in the village of Bristol. They did that, and so they've proven that they're working towards preserving this thing, and I think that was, as Supervisor Uhas explained, this is kind of the next chapter in that, and it's basically to support them in their endeavor.
Thanks.
Okay, page 9. This is the capital for the parks.
Oh, any other comments on operations? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
So I'm looking at page 119 in my book. We've got a miscellaneous contractual services, you know, up about $50,000. You know what that's for?
That is for the Pike River water testing, some environmental workshops, and for some crack sealing that we have to do on their roads.
Okay.
Those are the major chunks of that increase. Okay. Is there anything else in there, Matt, that you know of that recall?
Also, operation maintenance plan for the Pike River. We spent about close to $1 million for phase one. After all the restoration takes place, we need to make sure we maintain, especially all these native species, plant materials, bugs. So that's also going to be part of that. We're going to have an O&M plan built into the contract services so we can maintain it.
Do you see that going back down after this? Is this a one-time bump? Okay. Maintenance and supplies down a little bit lower. There's a, it goes from 45 to 80,000. What is that? What's that for?
Is there a line below that that says emergency? Is there two lines there?
It says major maintenance repair.
Yeah, what was major maintenance last year? I think it's just a
41,000.
I think if you add them together, they're the same total.
Okay, all right. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I forgot.
That makes sense.
Yeah, if you add them together.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Okay, I'm also on page 120. That is the single nature of the donation, which has been $25,000 for many years.
Well, as I said before, there's 12,000 in there. Pringle wants to hire another part-time person to do some nature classes. So we want to give them $12,000 towards those activities.
Further discussion on operations? All right, you want to proceed on the capital?
Yep, page 9 is the capital. We present in there the expense column, and then we put in a column for any revenues that we might be getting to help pay for those. And then there's the net bonding. So there's some smaller projects there for utilities, some some minor renovations that we have to do to some of our buildings. There's a pickup truck. There's the $39,000 for the Kemper projects that I talked about before. Chipper for $45,000. We generally put in every year a $50,000 to purchase floodplain property that's coming up. We have a growing number of properties that we own out on the floodplain. And eventually, when I first started this project, and this goes back to the 90s when we did some research, there was over 300 either houses or pieces of property that were owned by, not by us. But now we're up to, I don't exactly remember, but it's we've acquired more than half of those. And in the past, I don't know, 20 years. So I don't know how long it'll take to acquire them all, but we put some into houses or lots or to tear down something. This is just a chunk for that. We try to put that in there every year. Then there's a playground equipment. We put some in there every year to refresh the playground equipment at all of our parks. This could be at any one of them. Parkland development is the $75,000 that we get from waste management each year in the revenue column, and it gets added to our pool of funds that we can spend on capital improvements at the parks. Right now, that fund has several hundred thousand dollars in it. More replacements, that's the schedule that Matt and his people keep. They keep a close watch on how, when they purchase equipment, how long it's been around, how many hours it's been used, and they recommend, because we do the same thing in golf with their equipment. Petrifying Springs hiking trail, we're trying to get a grant for $160,000. Is that finalized, that grant?
It's been a tentative award right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, tentative award. And if we get, if we accept $160,000, it means we have to spend that, plus we have to match the funds. So we haven't formally, totally accepted it until the budget gets approved, because we can't spend the money until it's approved. But we have the grant. Petrifying Springs building is a new building that will be built behind the baseball diamond, which will be basically torn down and redone as a part of this project. That building is restrooms and storage facilities. The restrooms will be used by dog park people, by the beer garden people, and by just, it's one of the areas whenever we have big events out at the parks, they all seem to end up there, our rides and races and other stuff. So we'll have a nice facility there. It will be funded by $492,000 worth of revenue, and we put a little list on the bottom there of where that money will come from. Number one, we want to establish from the beer garden, a five-year plan of $60,000 worth of revenue per year to help pay for that building. And we're on track to make at least $60,000 this year. Then the beer garden has agreed to contribute one-time shot of $30,000 because of that restroom facility will be close to them, so they would benefit from that. We have some excess funds in our dog park fund. As I stated before, we can use that to fund this. And then there's some park building demolition funds that we have had for several years where we've used to tear down some different buildings. And a part of this project is to tear, we've got to tear down the ball diamond and do some other activities. So we use that, those remaining demolition funds, and then we will pull $96,000 of this hundreds of thousands of dollars we have in the Parkland Development Fund. So all we'll have to bond for this is $100,000, which really is about the cost of the, I think the ball diamond is $70,000 to redo it all. So we'll bond to redo the ball diamond, which is there, it's used, we're going to refurbish it.
And it needs it.
Does that explain your? Does that explain your question? Or does that answer your question about the $492,000 for the pet building?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a question on this. You've got $300,000 as future revenue, mm-hmm. but the $300,000 actually will get it regardless whether we do this or not, because it's in the lease with your garden now.
Correct.
So if we don't do anything, the $300,000 will be coming in.
Yes.
So it's not really that we can offset that, because this could be used to do other stuff there.
It could be, but what we're trying to do, and it's been suggested to us, on, is use the funds and not bond, not use bonding, but to use any revenue that's generated from various projects, you're going to see the same thing in the golf course on the next page, where we accumulate money, set it aside in these sinking funds. It's sort of the same concept as Brookside, what we did with the 20, we ended up borrowing, or the, I think the total cost is $22 million. We're using future revenues from Brookside to pay down that debt rather than use it for something else. Okay. It's a sinking fund. We do it for various other projects,
okay, too. I wasn't here when the release, of course, of this project with your government was done before, but that was projected at $300,000 revenue over the 5 years. About 60,000.
Yeah, something like that.
Years. That was projected to have it, and I don't know if there was any discussion what the money was going to be used for or not. Also, that has been on for what now? Year, 2 years?
This is the second year.
Second year. So really, we don't have 5 years left. We only got 3 more years left.
Right.
So we're not going to get 300,000 coming in as a revenue.
Well, if we update the lease, we will. If we add on more time, we will.
If we will, but as of right now, we don't have it. We just got 3 years left on the lease, so even if we get the 60,000, that will be about 180,000.
That's a true statement. We anticipate the thing keeping on going. It's been very successful. It's very few problems.
$30,000 into it. Show some buy-in.
Yeah, but I believe the $30,000 that they're putting in is because right now they got to pay for bathroom facilities that they're using, which is $5,000-$6,000 a year. So the $30,000 they're putting in is so they don't have to pay for that. So that's not really.
Dennis?
Yeah, you know, I heard the words used before, a want and not a need. We would have needed to do something to have a building in Petrifying Springs, regardless of the beer garden. That ballpark is a shambles. When we do have events, and our events have grown immensely there, when you look at the anniversary event, and now the event this year, the Oktoberfest, the dog parks, traffic, it's a busy park, and it's a well-used park. This money, most of it would have been spent. Now we have the luxury, unless they're total fools and are going to leave after 3 years, after putting $100,000 in that building, of having this beer garden there for a very long period of time. We're going to have this income more than 3 years. These guys aren't walking away. They're doing very well. We're doing very well. The people and the citizens of Kenosha County love it, but we need a building. We need to redo that ballpark. This is a way to pay for it. Listening to the preaching about not bonding, this is the formula we came up with, and it's a win for everybody.
Yeah, I support the chair of the committee, and I actually asked for specs on this to see where this was going to go and how this was going to be laid out. I had a constituent call me concerned that the ball diamond was being eliminated, and that's really not the case. So it's actually straightened out and improved. So I'm going to be in support of this. Thank you.
Go ahead, Jim. Right. Anything else?
On that particular one, and no, I can move on to the next one.
Yes.
The Bristol Woods Parkway and parking lot upgrades, $720,000. I'll speak for a little bit of this, and then I'll let either Ray or Matt talk a little bit more, but I'll tell you the numbers. The $720,000, we take a look at what it would cost to replace all of our parking lots and all of our roads in all. We've done them all. Silver Lake, we've done Fox River, Crystal Woods. Some of them we've done, some of them we haven't done. Some of them have actually been in the budget, some of them haven't. But when we did the cost estimate for redoing Bristol Woods, if you've ever been out there, there's a road that goes out, and then it comes to this big circular parking lot that has 120, I think that's the number of parking spaces. The cost to just to replace that, if without doing anything else, was estimated to be about $580,000. Now, if we wanted to put on an extra 40 or 50 parking spaces to accommodate what we think the traffic is going to be for Boundless Adventures, that's another, I think, 80. And then we did a traffic study too, and that said if you're going to have that kind of traffic, and I'm not the traffic expert, there's a bunch of them in this room, they said you should improve coming off of MB, the right-hand turn lane to go in, and then make the left-hand turn lane, or the left-hand turn lane as it bypasses. Those traffic control issues for that entrance area is another 60 grand. So it all adds up to 720,000. The part that's associated with the Bristol Woods part, 580. MB part, 60. And if we wanted to add a new spaces, another 80. That's the math. So that all adds up to 720,000. And when we signed the agreement with Boundless Adventures, we agreed to improve their add on the parking spaces. But we had in potentially, we figured, well, why not redo the other thing that we've been talking about for years? Never really hit the budget, but we have this for all of our, we have every parking lot in the whole county estimates. So that's where that number comes from.
Discussion anywhere? Yes? Yeah.
Through the chair. Jim, how old is that parking lot? And when is the last time anything's been done to it?
81.
So we got our money.
Older than me. Yes.
I sat with Jim and Ray and Barham yesterday for about an hour and a half and went over a few things. And these were two of those last two items. Again, updating a parking lot, doing those types of things, I'm really not against it so much as it is, you know, we haven't received dollar one from the adventure park yet. The lease says that we would update the parking lot, providing the board does vote for it. And say we do it, we do it when the board voted for it. But, you know, I understand it's an old parking lot. I went through it again yesterday in the daylight. And, it does need some work, but we don't know how that is going to be used specifically. We know there'll be buses. Coincidentally, as I was pulling in, a bus was pulling out right before I pulled in. So, you know, there are ways of getting in and getting out there. I would rather we look a year or so down the line and have a little bit of money to put into this from the adventure park, which, by the way, $12,000 out of that fund that we're getting, that revenue fund, is going to Pringle. That's not, you know, that's every year. I think the $5,000, I think it's just for this year. There's
one time.
It's only one time. So, and I did ask Executive Cruiser if he could put some money into Bristol during his negotiation, which I felt he didn't really do. I guess Pringle would have been, but I, you know, for Bristol, I thought that was a good $5,000 and well for donations. For the Petrifying Springs, I kind of have to reflect what David brought up. There's only 3 years left on a five-year contract. Can we at least get that extended? And again, I agree with what Chairman Elman says. Oh, they're crazy not to go forward with it. People have done crazy things. You know, I don't know. And if they do decide to walk for whatever reason, and we got to get somebody else in there, we're on the hook. Can we at least get a couple more years, or at least another amount of a couple more years on the agreement, so we do have some sort of teeth in it? That's all I want to bring up. But thank you, and I do thank Ray and Jim and Bob. They really gave me a lot of good information.
Further discussion? Yes.
Me?
Yes.
Okay. The thing you also have to remember is interest rates are going up. So if we bond now, as opposed to waiting 2 or 3 years, we're going to save money on the bonding to do some of these projects. So, you know, I mean, if we had wanted to, I mean, a year ago, 2 years ago, we could have got 1%, 1.5% on the bonding. So as the interest goes up, it costs us more money, more to borrow money. So, you know, I mean, to wait 1 year and iron out some things, I don't know if that's really gonna make a difference, but I think we're going to save money by bonding for this with the interest rates the way they are now.
All right, further discussion? All right, you want to finish on?
The last project on there is the Anderson Arts Building. This is a 2-year project. In the 2018 budget, we have $1.9 million in expenses and $1.5 million in revenue. In 2019, there's $2.3 million in expenses, $1 million in revenue. So what it boils down to is in total, the project is $4.2 million in expense, and we'll get $2.5 million back from the city, which is already being approved by them. We'll probably get it all this year. We're supposed to if we just do the timing right and get all of our bidding processes done. Now the budget of $4.2 million, we have already got quotes back, our estimates back. We bid the project, and we're right about at the $4.2 million, a little bit under. So we're on budget for that. We just can't sign any of the paperwork until after we have this budget.
All right, discussion anyway? Yes, Mike.
In the project, are you guys going to be adding any additional parking?
Additional parking is not a part of it. It's really to restore the exterior of the building, address, actually install HVAC in the building so that they can accommodate other juried art show type events down there. So it's basically to preserve the building, add HVAC, and bathrooms for events down there. I wouldn't be adding any additional parking. They typically, though, manage parking. We expanded the Kemper parking lot a couple years back when we did the restoration of the parking lot there, so some additional parking. And they do have parking on some off-street parking that they'll do for special events down there as well. So there wasn't any additional pavement being put down for anything.
So based on your analysis of the project, that level of parking should be adequate for what is intended on the usage of this building. We're sinking in a few million dollars here. And then to have it limited because nobody's got anywhere to park other than the side street seems a little short-sighted.
I would say, one, our ability to get additional parking, given the historic nature of that through the City Plan Commission, would be very slim, if not impossible. But we have a decent amount of parking. I forget the exact number of spots we've got at Kemper, but there's accommodations between the Kemper lot and the additional parking we did add on street when we did 66th. There's more than there was before. And like I say, for really big events, they are able to accommodate stuff off street there.
Thank you.
Jeff?
Ray, could you, I happen to agree with Supervisor Skolitsky on this, not to the point of not doing anything, but I'd like a report from you on what the actual parking is down there. Can you put something together for us, just to know what it is? Because I was one of the only ones who voted against, back when I was a city alderman, the Anderson soccer fields because of parking, and that's been a disaster. And I love soccer, and my kids played it. But you got to look at parking. And if there's enough, that's fine. But I do agree with what he said, and I'd like to have something brought back on what you feel the amount of parking is, where we could use it. You know, max events that they might do, that type of thing. I'd appreciate that.
I was just
going to
add one more thing, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead.
When we redid the parking lot, both at Kemper and Anderson off of 66th Street, they also designed that multi-use pathway with those gates to be just for that sheer fact that they knew they would have overflow and a shuttle service to go from the main Kemper Center lot. And we designed and built that multi-use path during those two points to accommodate heavy loads being bus traffic. So if there is a large event at Anderson, that was designed for that sheer purpose to accommodate larger.
All right, anything further on?
That's it on parks.
Parks, all right. Further discussion? All right, are there any motions here?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion?
Yeah. I just want to commend you guys and your administration on the Kemper issue. Every year I've been on this county board, it's been an issue, and at least we're being fiscally responsible and knowing where the money's going instead of just giving it. I think that's a big win for the county on both sides of it, and the downturn from $50,000 to $39,000. It just gives us an idea as a landlord so supervisors can see where things are going, and I think that's important to see. And on a side note, all these buildings we have, if we don't maintain them, they're not. I said this the first day I got on the talked to. We have to have maintenance plans that we do, and that's what's going to move the county forward. You know, that's what's going to save us and taxpayer tons of money when you just don't let stuff go, you know, when you maintain this thing. So, just great job from the administration.
Further discussion, Rob?
I'd like to mention Kemper. I think it's a win-win for us, the contract we have with them, and they take maintaining the building. I saw their budget for operations, it was $729,000. And if we took over the park, we'd have to come up with at least half of that just to maintain the park. So it's a win-win for both of us. Kemper wins. They provide a lot of services, a lot of programs, a lot of functions for the community. And county saves money in the process because we don't have to maintain anything except the amount of money we give them for utilities and any building improvements we're going to have anyway because they're our buildings. So I think it's a win-win for both of us.
Further discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Mr. Chairman.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to vote on everything in parks, but I'd like to abstain from Anderson and anything Kemper related, please. Right. That note for the record.
All right, minutes will still reply. All right, proceed with.
Thank you very much. Page 10 is golf.
Golf. Terry's favorite golf.
Pasture. Golf. There is no levy associated with golf. Our projections for this year are to have another profitable year in golf. Seven or eight in a row. I think one year we might have missed a little bit, but
what kind of profit?
I'll just go through this real quick. There is an increase in expense, but there's an increase in revenue to offset it. Salaries are there's no new headcount. There's just the annual step increases that our employees receive. They have a human resources cross charge here also, which they can't cover with levy, or they just have to cover it with revenue from the golf course.
Again, what was the profit? You said there was a profit. How much?
This year I think we're probably going to make $100,000, maybe a little bit more.
This year being 2018.
We could use a couple more warm weekends.
I'm all for it.
Got my vote.
We'll get right on that.
Last, I'm going to bat these up pretty fast. Last year, 17, we made $64,000. 16, we made a little over $300,000. 15, $139,000. 14, $68,000. In 13, we lost $16,000.
Was that when the bonding?
No, this is just profit.
Yeah.
This is
after. When did the bonding get paid off? Right?
That was 15, yeah, I think 2 or 3 years ago.
Motion approved.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, next.
Thank you. Highway Department is on page 11. There's a note there. It's about halfway down the page. It shows the historical levy of highway going back to 2014. And I know in the past we warned this committee that sooner or later it would maybe shift because there's been a pattern of the levy going down every year for the past 6-7 years. This year in 2019 went up a little bit. Went up $124,000. A chunk of that is again that personnel or the human resources cross charge. But it looks like we've kind of caught up with all the cost-saving things we did, really, that were based a lot around salaries increases, because after the 2010, we did some things with salaries. So we're sort of bottoming out, but the levy is still only at $1.8 million. Back in 2014, it was 2.2. 2015, it was 2 million. The last time we had a $1.8 million levy in highway was 2016. And we have increased pressure, increased work, more lane miles.
What is the lane miles this year projected in
253 lane miles.
I'm talking about construction.
No construction?
You're not doing 253.
No. I thought you wanted to know what the total. We'll get to that when we get to the next page. Because that's. I'll tell you what it is. It's around 13, 12 or 13.
But that's reconstruction. I think he's talking about additional.
We'll talk about it when we get to the next page.
Okay.
As far as the other expenses, salaries are just our annual step increases. Ray explained the change in management. We have some increases in vacation pay based on actual experience. People are taking more, earning more vacation. Medical insurance is just based on what the people are choosing. New human resources, cross charge. Now we have some expenses that are miscellaneous contractual services. We have to do a little bit more gravel crushing than we've done in the past. Our pit is empty, so we have to buy the gravel and crush it from an outside source. And some of these other expenses here, other operating expenses or roadway supply expenses, they're showing increases, but we have an increase in billing too. So we'll spend the money, put it in there, but we bill it out to the state or we bill it out to local. And we also decreased the fuel account a little bit because I think we over-budgeted a little bit this year. We've had better market prices than what we thought. So we decreased that based on our actual experience and what we think it's going to be in 2019. But the transportation aids will be up slightly from 18 to 19. That's the money that the state allocates to us in a big lump, like $3.1 million to be used. And they pay us in quarterly installments. So that's gone up from 18 to 19. And then our billings for the work that we do for the state and what I call sundry, that's the local municipalities that we do work for, that will go up also. Now the last two comments that we have on the bottom is when we get to the next page and we look at the capital spending, we're going to spend $1.4 million budgeted on equipment next year. That's higher than we've spent in the last several years. The past like 8 or 9 years, I think we've averaged $700,000 or $800,000 in equipment. We have to jack that up. Our fleet is getting old. I have to give kudos to our highway staff for maintaining equipment and not having to buy as much. We really do a good job of keeping our equipment up to date, but it is aging. It's on average, it's past, I think we're better than other municipalities, except for maybe like a Waukesha or something like that. But our fleet is aging, so we need to do something to catch up. We're doing a study on the age of the fleet by vehicle, how old they are being depreciated, and what we think we need to spend for the next 10 years to get caught up. We'll be able to give you guys a report on that. But we know it's more than $1 million, and $1.4 million is a good, at least it's a good start for 2019 to catch up on this spending for vehicles. And then the other comment I wanted to make, and this will go to the lane miles, we have $12.1 million in this budget in net infrastructure spending. And I'm just going to read a few numbers here. In 18, that net infrastructure number was $4.2 million. In 2017, that number was $5.8 million. 2016, it was $2.7 million. In fact, for the last 5 years, our budget's averaged just a little over $4 million. And in 2019, that net infrastructure number is $12 million. Now, a lot of it's covered. We can flip the page. I don't want to go past operations. If any, same headcount in operations. That's page 11. Does anybody have any questions before we go to the capital side?
Jim, discussion? Yes.
So I'm looking at the big jump in contract, well, not a big, I mean, 30,000 more in contracted services. I have a hard time tracking which line item you're talking about because I work.
That's the gravel crushing.
That's the gravel crushing. Yeah. Are you looking at that as a one-time thing and then it'll go back down, or are you looking at having to buy gravel and crush it every year?
This is going to be more level loaded now. We used to do it every 2 to 3 years when we had gravel in our pit. The pit is officially spent. Now this year we did have a little bit of a windfall in that we got how many?
Almost 50,000 tons.
50,000 tons of broken concrete that as part of the Foxconn asphalt. Is there concrete too, isn't there?
Mixed.
It's asphalt and concrete that we had trucked at no charge to us to the Wilmot pit. So we're going to be able to use that now, crush that basically, and use that as our gravel needs require for this year, and we haven't done a projection, but it's going to be for a number of years. We're going to be able to work off that.
Okay, I'm curious about the gas. I mean, we're looking at $5.95 this year, and you're bringing it down to $5, and the cost of gas is going up. I mean,
$5.95 was too high. Our spending pattern this year showing we'll be below that.
Okay. Because this just says that's what you're expecting to come in at the end of the year. So that's just high.
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
And then the cost of supplies, other roadway supplies, $53,700 on that same page, 130.
We'll get that back in billings. That's where we charge a lot. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought I heard you say. I just wanted to clarify that.
Sorry
if I
went a little fast.
All right, thank you.
Further discussion? Yes.
I'm confused, maybe, because they're two different items. The road spoils that went to the Paloma pit, you're not crushing those for the crushed stone or gravel that you're looking at here.
Yeah, that'll be crushed. That has to be crushed.
Okay. So why do you have increased gravel crushing here? Then you said that'll last us a while. I'm just confused on that.
The stuff that's there,
yeah,
the 550,000 tons, needs to be crushed.
Right. So this $43,000 is just to crush that?
No. It's not going to be crushing that whole 550,000 tons. It's going to be crushing a portion of that.
A portion of it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get definition of what the gravel crushing increase due to gravel crushing. It's the gravel crushing that we're going to be doing on a portion of the road spoils.
Yes.
Correct. Thank you. That's all.
Yep.
It's confused as to whether we're buying it or doing it.
Portion of that.
All right. Anything further? Are you done with your presentation?
I'm with page 11, yes. Page 12 is the capital associated
with
the highway. If you go about halfway down in that list where it says triaxle, everything above that is the trucks.
Right.
And it adds up to like $1.4 million.
So can I ask a question?
Yes.
Below that is all the various projects that we have, and if there's any revenue coming in with associated with them. And I want to make a comment, because this came up in the Highway WG Bridge. I'll start with that one. That's Highway WG is like Russell Road. It's on a state line. We're going to get 80% of that covered with funding, and that was based on some traffic studies.
Where's the funding coming from?
State
of Wisconsin.
Basically, the state does the condition analysis of that bridge,
okay,
said it's due to be replaced, and that's the funding that they provide for that.
The countywide bicycle route and signage guide, I think that question came up in our meeting, our public. When we first did this bicycle route guide, it was like 3 years ago, and there was an estimate came through. Numbers are rough. It was around $300,000. It was 80% funded by a CMAQ grant. Since that point in time, we have, and we were officially granted that grant, but we've done some other things. There's been extra bike routes. We've changed the specs. We've improved. So we have to dump additional money in to make sure that this bike signing is done. We will not get money back, but this is part of that in order to complete that signage. So I don't know if that's the answer I think I gave at the other meeting. It's the same as this one. The Highway C, the multi-use trail, at our meeting, I put into this budget $300,000. At that time, we had applied for TAP grant. We have received word that we are going to...
If it has been awarded, but we have not signed the agreement yet.
So that we'll get money back to pay for that $300,000, all of it.
How much?
All of it?
How much?
It's over 300.
Yeah, over.
So why would you bond then?
Because when I put this together, I didn't know there was TAP funding coming back.
We
I know that today.
We want to reduce.
We haven't signed it.
So
we haven't signed it yet. We told
yeah.
we were awarded,
we'll
but we haven't
bonding.
Signed the paperwork yet.
Okay, but why wouldn't you want to then change the budget now?
Well, typically, you don't want to say you have the money until the state municipal agreement is signed. Because this is a possibility that they can change their mind. So we are just erring on the side of safety. If we have it, fine, it's going to be a bonus. If we don't have it,
we won't
then,
bond.
we already
we
know
won't bond for it.
Right.
Yeah. We won't borrow the money. Won't bond for
it. Sell it.
The Highway E Trail is another CMAQ where we're going to get some reimbursement. That is going east from 22nd Avenue to Sheridan Road. There's a stoplight in here for approximately $400,000 at Highway H and 65th Street.
Which is badly needed.
Oh, yeah. About a year ago.
All right. Here's your chance. Highway F, Oda KD, $500,000 for that chunk of road.
Is that a repave or what?
Clement?
Yeah, I got some.
The county trunk highway H from KD to O will be realigned. That is a total reconstruction. It's a partly new and reconstruction.
This is F. So it's F, and it's, if you're familiar with that area, basically F is misaligned right now. It ends on Highway O, and then you jog. Basically, if you come from the east, it hits O. You jog north.
I know that area.
And then pick it up. This is going to realign. It's been a project actually in the work, largely funded with Round Lake Beach funds. It's been in the works for 5 years, 7 years, a long time.
No.
Wasn't there other state funding for that? I mean, is this all
yes.
we're spending?
Yeah. There's state funding for that, but this 500 is a right-of-way acquisition. The state doesn't suppose a right-of-way acquisition.
Total project cost is roughly...
It's in this year's budget. It's millions.
Yeah, this isn't the actual road construction.
No, this is just for the right of way.
It's the right of
way acquisition because that's never covered by state or federal funding.
Sometime in 2020 or 2021.
Right of way acquisition would be next year and then construction the following year.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Local Road Improvement Program is a program that as a county, pick out different projects and go to the state. And they will give us money back for that, so we have to pay half.
Was that a 50-50 thing?
That's a 50-50 program. We do that every year. Highway K.
Yeah.
That is 60th Street from the... There's two sets of railroad tracks that cross 60th Street between the high school and Highway H. Now, the city has signed up to do the part between the railroad tracks. And then we are going to do the part from the railroad tracks to Highway H. That is what the $1,000,001 is for. And there's some development. There's a couple new businesses there that are on Highway K. That
how much is the city spending?
I don't know.
You said they were going to pay for something.
Without any idea, because without any idea.
The goal would be, the goal would be to jurisdictionally transfer this once that section is completed, jurisdictionally transfer it to the city. The city has some interested parties, fairly serious, in the old marshalling yards, the old AMC marshalling yards for industrial development, and that's what's driving this from the city's perspective.
And the city's willing to take it over and are responsible for plowing and everything, right?
Correct, and it's jurisdictionally transferred.
There's three new businesses that are looking at that marshalling yard. So by expanding the road, that'll move your business development almost immediately.
You bring it up to city standards of curb and gutter and everything.
It'd be four lane. I believe that's scheduled to be curb and gutter. I don't remember the profile.
Curb and gutter to minimize.
It's an urban profile.
Like you did Highway N.
Right.
Yeah.
Urban profile.
Again, conceptually, you're looking at.
Conceptually.
Yeah.
Curb and gutter.
All right, anything further?
I got a couple of questions.
Yes.
Highway KR, okay, $3,000,003 and no revenues. KR was supposed to be done by the state, right?
Right, so as part of that MOU, you recall, $3.3 million was the number that was capped, our contribution to... The whole project.
First question I have is, if it wasn't for Foxconn, would we have to do KR and spend $3.3 million?
So the short answer to that question is?
No.
No. That would be the short answer.
So we got stuck with $3.3 million to improve KR, which doesn't need improving, because Foxconn came in, correct?
Yes, but
But
I would add, that the road improvements that are the state's going to make to about roughly 10 plus times the 3.3, they're estimating $35 to $40 million, the improvements they're going to make, and the potential increase then to tax base based on all the development that will be anticipated.
I get that. But the point I'm making is that their state isn't coming up with what they should come up. They should get all the costs, but they're not going to, okay? The other thing I have to ask is Highway S from 31 to I-94, expense $10.9 million, revenue $7.5 million. That's another state project, right?
No, that's ours.
Okay,
that's,
but
that's is a local project.
So where's the $7.5 million coming from?
That is funding from state and federal reimbursement for that section. We've still got, there's actually two phases to that. So there's a phase from H to 31, and then there's a phase from H to I-94. Phase one, which is this, I don't know the exact breakdown and how this is. It's showing here that we're getting $7.5 million. That I know we are getting back for that first phase of construction. The total project cost, which is shown in the budget, I think, as it goes forward.
At $10.9 million, let me just back up a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
The $10.9 million is all right away on Highway S.
Ah, for both sections.
The whole thing. That's just the
buy.
Got to
buy up. Yeah.
The $7.5 million is when we signed this deal with the state for Foxconn. We said we'd pay $3.3 million. That's the $3.3 million.
Okay.
And they said, and then we were going to do some stuff on Highway A. There was all kinds of different components. They were going to spend $30 million on Highway KR, which will have some spillover effect to Kenosha County. And we had to put up $3.3 million. We get a new KR, we got a redone A, we had a chunk of H which was going to be redone. They were going to give us $7.5 million, which we could really use for anything we wanted to use it for. So we're going to use that $7.5 million to buy the right away on Highway S.
And one last comment. How much of this gets done if we don't pass the capital improvement budget?
Well, we could do the pass the budget, or
I'm asking the question because in the past we've had a problem getting a capital improvement budget adopted by the board.
The bonding.
And I wanted to let make it clear if we don't pass the capital improvement budget this year, 90% of this stuff isn't going to get done. You're
well,
not going to buy
half million,
you're not
we'll
buy
get a check for.
Okay? Just making a point, that's all.
Your point is correct.
All right, further discussion on this? Seeing none, the chair would entertain some motion here.
And we'll throw through.
Second.
Further discussion then on the highway? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All
aye.
Opposed? All right, next.
The last department, planning and development. The increase from 2018-2019 in the levy is $24,000. That's made up of a couple of items. The personnel increase is just their normal step increases. We'll have there's a $5,000 increase from Sewer Pack. They give us a number of what their services will cost based on the estimated value of county property. And we're expecting a decrease in revenue on permits up from 140 to 130,000. That's pretty much operations. They have one capital project, and it is to do the research for the South Pike River. They've already got a grant. They're waiting to accept the grant because we have to spend $117,000 in order to get to $75,000. And that project is to take a look at what to do about all the flooding in the floodplain. Basically, what is it, 31 to H, north of Washington Road, or Highway S, correct? It's just the start of that project.
It's from Highway 50 all the way up to Hawthorne Hollow.
Okay.
Motion approved.
All right.
Second.
Discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, thank you.
Just one last thing. 30 seconds. The last page, we have some small departments that really don't have any levy. There's the Board of Adjustment, tree planting, land and water management, dog parks. It's pretty much the same from here to there.
That sounds great, huh?
No.
Is there a motion on this?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Second discussion.
Thank you very much.
All those in favor say aye.
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 All right, thank you. The next item I'm going to take out of order to accommodate the Corporation Council's schedule. He was here a moment ago. That was his opinion on the issue of the proposed changes offered by Supervisor Poole. I wanted him to be subject to questions or comments if you had any on his opinion. He has to accommodate his schedule. So, Corporation Council, where is he?
We lost him.
I would like to take a 5-minute recess.
Well, I want to accommodate his schedule.
Jeff, you got to go home. I'm not going to the bathroom.
Oh, you're not going to the bathroom.
Right.
Don't go to the bathroom.
Okay, Joe?
Uh-oh.
All right, we have the Corporation.
There goes the neighbor.
Right. Your attention, please. We have the Corporation Council. You have his opinion. It was short. I assume you've read it. Questions or comments are appropriate now. If not, we'll proceed.
Okay, sorry. I saw the summary, Mr. Carter. My question is, at least that we would like to do last night, our limit caps us at a contribution of 18%.
Can you close the door over there so we don't, we can hear clearly?
At the lowest, or I should say,
thank you.
Lowest tier, which is the highest. Yeah. Is that correct?
I would probably have to refer to HR Director Tappa on that. I would probably make my basic understanding that is accurate.
Good point.
But again,
it's a great point.
This is a quick and dirty review.
So we look at our lowest pay, which is 12/28 on our salary schedule, and the percentage for 2019 for affordability is 9.86%. Of that, so that gets us to $1,889. You take that that lowest wage, multiply it by 130 hours a month, times 12 for an annual figure, and basically the amount is $1,889.06 that we would be targeting as that cutoff where we would want to start to incur penalties.
Okay, great. So if you move above it, then that penalty clause comes in. Now, is that just for municipalities, or is that municipality clause, or is that in general?
That's the Affordable Care Act.
Okay, just wanted to make sure that it wasn't set, because that is a monster with a lot of segments in that place. And so that's what we're getting at, is that we're trying to avoid, these independent penalties. Now, we've done the analysis on the penalties. Does it cost us less to pay penalties versus adjusting the premium schedule, or is it, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes it's less expensive to pay premium. It's just like when ACH came out, a lot of people didn't take it on because the fines were less than what they were having to pay for the insurance.
Right.
And if they're healthy, I understand why they've made that.
Right.
I'm just curious if we had the opportunity to do that now.
Well, it's a difficult analysis to make because the penalty starts to get incurred when you have those employees go out into the marketplace and get a tax credit for the premium in the marketplace, you really have no way of doing
it. And so right now at our lowest tier, the most expensive, okay, being at 18, from your perspective, that would be the floor or the ceiling, whichever perspective you want to look at, okay? And all you then could look at are the bronze, silver, gold, platinums levels increasing in cost. You could not go any lower than 18, correct?
Right.
All right. And that would kind of disincentivize, which I know you're trying to do, keep the overall claims cost down, which makes perfect sense. Okay. Now, given that, and since we, you know, kind of up against the left, and looking at your RFP, right, and then also what Humana brings to the table. Are there other things that are being presented by Humana to help employees make healthier choices, stay healthy, right? Because if they're not making claims, it costs us less.
Right.
Has that been articulated by Humana or whomever else is available there? Programs that they available to keep costs, hence maybe claims, lower for the county?
So telemedicine is certainly one of those that can reduce claims overall. And again, we're driving employees to use that with a lower copay for that service to try to promote that. We're working to promote healthcare consumerism. We'll be doing that during open enrollment and talk to employees about where they choose to go, make the difference in what hits us claim-wise and can impact us overall for lower cost. We looked at the prescription drug program to try to reduce those costs. And we are absolutely open to whatever our experts and consultants share with us and offer. And if it makes sense, we'll obviously take advantage of it.
And we currently work at the Milton. And they, you know, of course, they go to various healthcare providers for the RFP. Have we looked at any other representatives to find out whether or not there are less expensive organizations? I don't mean the Humanas of the world. I'm talking the Millimans.
Well, Milliman is an actuary.
Milliman, sorry.
Horton is our consultant.
Okay.
So
have we gone out and shopped that around?
We actually did in 2016, I believe. We shopped for a consultant. And Horton won that.
Won the bid.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'll let him know. Next question.
All right. Any other comments, questions of the Corporation Counsel on his opinion? All right. Well, that thank you, Joe. And I think that concludes it. We'll move on to Human Services. There was a request to take
just
a
take
break.
Just take 5 minutes.
And is that that's agreeable?
No.
We will resume at 8 o'clock.
Well, it has to be.